One, two, three, four!
Well, she was just 17. Did you know what
I mean? Well, 50 years ago, the Beatles rocked us all on the Ed Sullivan Show. And rock and roll was king. 50 years later, a couple of the Beatles were still dominating the stage at the Grammys. L.A. Times pop music critic Randall Roberts suggests that rock and roll music, as we have known it, is in a coma. Is it? Well, we'll talk about that this hour with Peter Roller, associate professor of music at El Verno College in Milwaukee. Currently, or recently published Milwaukee Garage Bands, Generations of Grassroots Rock on History Press. Peter Roller, welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
Good morning.
So, rock and roll on life support, yes or no?
I don't think so. It's helpful to use a description of the band, and we're talking about good old-fashioned electric guitar bands with electric guitar, bass, drums, maybe keyboard, and lead vocalists. There's still plenty of those around, but the Grammys in the rock category are just not a good indication of that.
Well, I mean, you know, Led Zeppelin, who hasn't had an album in, a studio album in how many years, wins Best Rock Album? That kind of blew me away.
Right. So-called classic rock has a heavy shadow over the kind of people who vote for the Grammys, and so I think they just do popularity votes for the acts of their youth, if they're still around. And Led Zeppelin had just simply reunited briefly, and there was a live record from that, but it's all music from their 70s career, so they're just voting for the music of their youth.
So the Grammy voters are all 60-year-old white guys?
Well, not all, but you can really see it in the profile of the rock and some of the other categories. For instance, Best Pop Instrumental, Herb Alpert.
Yeah, really? Come on.
Tijuana Brass fame, who was the ultimate Hollywood label insider. He had A&M Records, A being Alpert. And so he's a good musician. He's still around. But I think they're voting, you know, for their warm and fuzzy memories.
Well, Black Sabbath wins for Metal Performance of the Year.
Right. That's ignoring many, many hard rock and metal bands that are young and out there today. But because Ozzy reunited with two of the original Black Sabbath guys, they're going to give them that nostalgic vote.
Okay. So, all right, well, let's leave that aside then for a second and talk about, I think we want to do a couple of things this hour. One, we want to kind of talk about how we got here a little bit, some of the history and some of the big changes that have happened in rock and roll over the years. But I also want to know a little bit about, okay, so the nostalgia vote goes to some of these, hey, I'm a huge Led Zeppelin fan. I don't want anyone to think that that's not true. But it seems like what we hear on the radio is mostly this pitch-corrected synth, pop, dance, whatever. That's what's commercially successful these days. Where are the rock and rollers?
Yeah, I think it's always good to look at rock and roll as a local, almost indigenous art form in the country it started in, the United States. So there's plenty of people still enjoying playing in rock and roll bands, electric guitar centered bands, and some of those still get into the major marketplace. One that my students at El Verno will write papers of endorsement about is Kings of Leon. They're just a traditional electric guitar focused band. They're all brothers and have that kind of neighborhood quality that I wrote about in my Garage Bands book. So that can still be found. It's still valid for people who play in that style, whether they're just playing in the neighborhood and in the basement or whether they get wider in their careers. But this studio music has gotten a lot more complex with digital possibilities and with all the wonderful things that keyboards can do. So a lot of the ones that make it big on the big albums are mixing up rock music into new sounds. And they gave one award to Imagine Dragons. And, you know, when you listen to their song and they were on the Grammys, you hear a little bit of that old rock band sound, and there are electric guitars and bass, but you hear a lot of digital sounds and very heavy percussion effects. And, you know, the music keeps growing on record, as did the Beatles within 3 or 4 years of being a simple rock and roll band. We all know what they were doing on record.
Well, the amazing things that they did with four-track recording equipment. I mean, even for that day, it was pretty crude.
Yeah, they were amazingly good writers and performers of their songs and of cover songs. So everyone who was on the ground in England before they ever hit the Ed Sullivan Show observed that they were incredibly good and charismatic, and they had this unique quality that they were writing most of their own songs.
Well, that was something that was a really big change that happened in rock music in the early 60s. I mean, up until that point, going back to Tin Pan Alley, you had songwriters, and then you had song performers, and they weren't generally the same person. If you were performing something, somebody else wrote it. Talk about that time period a little bit and when that changed.
So people like Lennon and McCartney, who were really soaking up as much American music as possible in the early 60s, they did see some American artists who wrote their own songs and were in bands, and those would be people like Chuck Berry, who just has a huge catalog of fast 12-bar blues songs, but written with many, many creative words about teenage life. And then Buddy Holly, who they really loved, and he wrote most of his catalog. And so, you know, there were models there, and then the professional songwriters were still in Tin Pan Alley in New York City, but we called it the Brill Building, and they were young teen artists of the rock and roll generation who were writing songs slanted for young people, people like Carole King, Ellie Greenwich, a lot of male-female teens, which was a good combination for writing these kind of teen pop rock songs. You there?
Oh, excuse me. I've got to turn my microphone on if I'm going to talk. We've got a couple of Buddy Holly songs. Let's hear Think It Over.
Great.
Of course, Buddy Holly, one of the icons of rock and roll, and somebody who was part of that real game-changing phenomenon that we saw in the 50s.
Right, and you know, there's probably an early Buddy song where he's just doing like most other 50s rockers, in that he's doing an up-tempo 12-bar blues and just writing his own lyrics and his own little melody for it. So everyone starts out in the roots of American music and then tends to get more creative in their songwriting.
Well, you mentioned the songwriting duos. Carole King, who later went on to have her own recording career, started out as a songwriter, and Aretha Franklin recorded one of her songs and really made it famous. Let's listen to that. Aretha Franklin singing "Natural Woman," that was a huge hit for her. But Carole King didn't start out singing her own music; she's just started out writing for others, and then later on went on to have a big recording career of her own.
Right, and you know there is something to said for people writing great songs and then really gifted performers doing a unique version of them, and that's what Aretha did right there. So can't just put all value on people who write their own songs. There's really great interpreters like Aretha.
And, of course, Carole King interpreted some of her own songs, including It's Too Late. And we'll use that to ride into the break. We're talking about rock and roll. It's not on life support. It's still alive. We're talking about it this hour with Peter Roller, associate professor of music at El Verno College in Milwaukee. What do you think? 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org. Find us on Facebook. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Dancing to the music.
That's the Joy Cardine Rock and Roll Party on Wisconsin Public Radio this morning. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Peter Rawler is with me, associate professor of music at El Verno College in Milwaukee. He recently published the book Milwaukee Garage Bands, Generations of Grassroots Rock. We're listening to little Sam Cooke. He wasn't really included among the Brill Building writers or Tin Pan Alley artists, but Sam Cooke seemed to take up where Chuck Berry and Little Richard left off with songs like Having a Party.
Yeah, and You Send Me, his first big hit. He turned out to be a great songwriter on top of an amazing singer. Started out in a gospel group, the Soul Stirrers, and out of Chicago, and moved to L.A. And did a lot of these great productions out in L.A.
Of course, my favorite all-time Sam Cooke song was Another Saturday Night. It was a huge hit for him as well.
Yeah, and others could cover these songs because they're just so durable.
Well, I guess one thing we might want to talk about is what is it about some of this music that has made it stand the test of time?
Yeah, I want to use one fancy scholarly word that is in my dissertation in my book, Milwaukee Garage Bands, and that is rock overall has an aesthetic of basicness. And that means that you can get by with three or four chords as long as you do the song with passion, with a little uniqueness. It works. And so that's why there isn't that big a gap between teen garage bands sometimes and professional rockers. And they need a lot of three and four chord songs to get started. And sometimes those are covers and sometimes they're able to write them.
Sam Cooke died in 1964, just as Bob Dylan was getting more popular by that time. And a lot of people credit Dylan with putting the Brill Building writers out of business. Would you agree with that?
Well, he didn't put them out of business, but he definitely raised the bar towards a much more personal and poetic way of writing lyrics for songs. But he took it back to the roots. He was very into the blues, and a lot of his songs are three-chord, bluesy-oriented or folk songs. So kind of going both directions. He's challenging them with poetry, but he's also keeping the really rootsy kind of rock quality of the music. And you can see that with someone like John Lennon, who just turned from all the puppy love songs of the early Beatles towards very personal, kind of like the politics of personal relationship, inspired by Dylan.
Let's listen to a little Positively 4th Street here. Of course, Bob Dylan is still around, still making music. He's gone through a lot in his career, but again, his music has survived and is still being covered by people.
Yeah, it is. It really is, and that is intergenerational. I've noticed that many people who go into rock and singer-songwriter still love Dylan and look up to him.
You know, I was watching on television, I was watching Paul McCartney's Shea Stadium concert. Of course, the Beatles had performed at Shea. And it was one of the performances, the original Beatles performance, that convinced them not to perform live anymore because they said we couldn't hear the music. We couldn't hear our own music. We couldn't hear ourselves play or sing. The crowd was so loud. And it was one of the reasons they quit touring. But so we see Paul McCartney at Shea Stadium, and I'm looking at the crowd shots. And there are people, young women particularly, screaming for Paul just like their grandmothers probably did when the Beatles originally performed there. And that really struck me. It's kind of like, wow, you know, really? Is there nothing new under the sun? Don't they have somebody else they can scream for?
Well, it's pretty powerful when it kind of gets handed down to you from your parents. So I see young people in my rock history course with their own taste in music, but it's undeniable that they often pick up something from the music they heard sitting in a car seat in a minivan or the things their parents played. And so they sometimes come back around to the Beatles or Neil Young or Paul Simon, things like that.
Well, I remember the first time I found that my Led Zeppelin tapes were missing and discovered them in my son's room.
There you go.
let's go to the phones. Matt in Sparta is with us. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. You know, I was just wondering, it seems to me, if we're having a discussion on whether rock music is still alive and kicking, shouldn't we be talking about bands that have been playing in the last 10 or even 15 years? I mean, you know, for rock bands like, Breaking Benjamin or Nonpoint or Skillet come to mind. And, you know, if you want to talk about heavy metal, like Five Finger Death Punch or All That Remains, or even if you go back a little bit, Pantera or Metallica, I mean, do those bands get any love from the Grammys or, any kind of rock buffs?
I think the Grammys, as we said, are very biased towards classic rock. In pop and hip-hop, they try to look at younger generational people, but there seems to be a real bias towards classic rock at the Grammys. But that doesn't mean that, like I said, there aren't electric guitar bands in both metal and in alternative rock putting out lots of records and just enjoying playing in different local scenes.
Well, there was a performance by Metallica at the Grammys, wasn't there?
Yeah, Metallica is one of the ones that is sort of grandfathered in as sort of a next generation classic band. So, and they mix them up with other performers on stage.
Mm-hmm. Matt, thanks for that call. Let's go to Jack in La Crosse. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. I seldom ever call in with you guys. I'm always getting ready for work. But about 40 years ago, I read an article that talked about why music cycles through different formats. I was a disc jockey in the 80s, and what the guy was saying was that these groups play rock and roll, and then they start getting more complicated, and the people stop dancing to it and have to sit down and listen to it, and then another group comes along that's got a beat and you can dance to it. And I've kind of followed that over the years. I'm just wondering whether your guest has any comments on that. That, you know, the Beatles are a classic example. I mean, originally they had a beat and you could dance to it. And who was dancing to the White Album? So I'm just wondering.
I would say the possibilities of recording studio, even back to the mid '60s, are what allow rock performers to go from a simple electric guitar band type songs to wanting to do different things with their song structures. But then remember that on the White Album, the Beatles did really atmospheric songs and solo acoustic songs, and then they did their version of Revolution, which is just like a Elmore James meets Chuck Berry blues. So they weren't completely forgetting their electric guitar band roots.
And Jack, what was your radio, your disc jockey name, if you don't mind sharing that?
Well, believe it or not, when I was in Milwaukee, it was Jack Socha.
Okay.
In the smaller markets in Wisconsin, it was like John Stewart or something like that.
Yeah.
The Polish was good in Milwaukee.
Well, see, I was a rock and roll disc jockey in my early days, only I had a much more pretentious name, which maybe I'll share it if enough people ask. Jack, thanks so much for the call. Always good to hear from another old radio guy. Clarence in Watertown, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hi, Clarence, are you there? Go ahead.
Yes, sir, I am. I'm in the milk house. All the water pipes are froze this morning.
Uh-oh.
I am 65 going on 66. My favorite band, this is really only a personal opinion, is John Fogerty and Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Oh, yeah.
It seems so uncluttered. And
yeah.
It's almost a little country, but it's still, I think, quite rock and roll.
Do the cows like it?
All the people that we have doing the milking in the parlor love country music.
Oh, give them a little Fortunate Son. See what they do with that.
That and Down on the Corner.
There you go.
I would add about Fogerty and Creedence is that he was really into certain roots of rock and roll that many of us hadn't heard. And so he knew about rockabilly, so you hear that kind of country rock flavor pretty early on. And he knew about black gospel, like the Staple Singers. So you hear that real gut bucket, rootsy guitar in some of his songs, like Born on the Bayou. And so he was really just recycling American roots into some wonderful, and I agree, nicely simple songs that, again, other beginning garage bands could play and often did. And they didn't just play Proud Mary.
Well, you know, that's the thing about Creedence's music. You could pick up a guitar, and if you knew three chords, you could probably figure it out. And so, you know, it made it really easy for some of these. It seemed like in the late '60s, just about if you put four people together and three of them had instruments, you had a band.
Yeah, there was a real revival of electric guitar bands after the British Invasion, but one of the things that my book, by being intergenerational all the way from the 50s through the 90s, is that there was no dropout of local electric guitar bands in areas like Milwaukee, and they had amazing song lists of cover songs until the Beatles sort of set that model of trying to write your own song. So I just wanted to share a list that's in my book, Milwaukee Garage Bands. This is a teen band from Shorewood called the Chevelles, and they operated from the early 60s until about 65. So here's their song list. Papa's Got a Brand New Bag by James Brown. Slow Down, which the Beatles did on an early album. I Fought the Law. You know, that early song.
Right.
Too Much Monkey Business by Chuck Berry. Satisfaction by the Stones. Good Lovin' by the Rascals. And then this song, One Track Mind, My Baby's Got a One Track Mind. That was like a standard just for Milwaukee area bands. It was a very obscure Gene Vincent song. And I could go on, but it's just an amazing thing that bands could choose their own songs, be influenced by other teen bands on what they choose, like that obscure One Track Mind, and they just really dug coming up with their own versions of this music, even if they barely knew what they were doing.
We're at news time. We're going to come back, and we'll have more of our conversation with Peter Rahler, Associate Professor of Music at El Verno College, and with you at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. Bruce Springsteen, another rocker with something in that's still left in the tank. His new album opened at number one. We just listened to a little bit of his song, High Hopes. We're talking about rock and roll and where it is today. Some music critics after the Grammys said maybe rock and roll is on life support. Peter Rahler, Associate Professor of Music at El Verno College, says, not so fast, my friends. Still plenty of life in the old rock and roll yet. We're talking about that this hour with Professor Rahler and with you at 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org or on Facebook. Well, we were listening to a little Springsteen there. Obviously, Paul McCartney still going strong today and won a Grammy on Sunday for Song of the Year, a song he recorded with Nirvana, Cut Me Some Slack. What's the story with this?
The song that got the Grammy for McCartney versus Springsteen. With McCartney, Dave Grohl, you know, formerly of Nirvana, was doing a documentary about a famous recording studio in L.A., and he asked McCartney would he take part in that, and he said, yeah, I can come for a couple hours, and when he came in, they thought they were going to do a cover song, kind of like we were talking about with garage bands, but McCartney said, no, it's already been done by us. Let's just write a song in 2 hours, and they wrote this one-off song. And with the bias towards classic rock people at Grammys, that got the award, even though it's really just a song associated with a soundtrack of a documentary. Springsteen is still happening. He's still doing creative things. He's still touring. And he's just evolving in that his band, which was a big part of his personality, he's been doing it so long that he's lost members. So I'm from Northern New Jersey, so I saw the E Street Band in little bars, and he always had Clarence Clemons, the African-American sax player, as kind of like a guiding light. He has passed away, but his nephew is playing sax and has joined the band. And then little Steven Van Zandt, he's become an actor since his Sopranos role, and he's now in something else on cable. So Bruce has hooked up with a younger generation musician, Tom Morello, who is very politically active with Rage Against the Machine, and they're doing a lot of things together on this recent record. So not surprisingly, there's some very hard-hitting political songs, and then there's this High Hopes that Bruce didn't even write. So he freed himself from having to be the singer-songwriter, and he just went out and found some lesser-known songs by other people for half the songs, including High Hope, on this record.
The one of the another genre of music that appears to be really still rolling right along is modern country. An artist by the name of Jason Aldean is defining country music these days. What is it about his music that's so appealing?
Well, he's part of a bunch of younger country musicians, usually males, who are rockers on electric guitar as much as singers and songwriters. So there's a very thin line between what we would think of as rock and roll and what we think of as modern country or even country rock. And Springsteen said in an interview for that High Hopes album coming out, he said when he listens to guitar-type band music, he hears more rock and roll in modern country than he hears just about anywhere else. And so it's really exciting for a certain demographic, and I hear about it a lot from students in my rock history class who really most of their listening is to modern country, but they don't hear it as very different than rock and roll.
Well, and if you go back to a lot of country's roots, the rockabilly, I mean, a lot of it, you know, really translated. Let's listen to a little bit of Jason Aldean.
But when she says, baby,
Jason Aldean, When She Says Baby. Talking about rock music this hour with Peter Rahler, Associate Professor of Music at Alverno College and in Milwaukee. And he recently published a book titled Milwaukee Garage Bands, Generations of Grassroots Rock. So you teach a course called The History of Rock?
Yeah, it is. It's an elective third year to fourth year class.
I definitely have to go back to college.
Yeah, well, remember how jazz studies was just creeping in probably when we were young, and there was that one course about jazz history? That's pretty much it's moved towards rock and pop and soul history now, too.
Yeah, when I was in college, there was a course about J.R.R. Tolkien. Let's see. Let's go to Doug in Appleton. Hi, Doug.
Well, hi. Howdy. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, seems to me that the Grammys, you know, I've always kind of, you know, been a very cloistered, not receptive, even to really brilliant performers. I mean, once, like a couple of classic examples I can think of that never got any love really is one being Frank Zappa. This guy's, you know, pretty much a legend. I don't know if he ever got a nod from the Grammys. I mean, you know, he spanned pretty much all genres of rock. He dabbles in classical and whatnot, but even if you want to go for something a little more recent, there's a band called Bean, and they are just, you know, prolific and visionary, and they bring a lot of candor and wit to their music, and they're practically unheard of. I mean, I did a radio show down there in Madison on the board a few years back, and I always played those guys because I always thought they were getting short shrift everywhere else.
Yeah, well, the Grammys, as we said, are not a fair representation of the lay of the land in pop music, but they often find one young generation band that they have the time to kind of turn their attention to. And this year it seemed more like the hip-hop Macklemore and Lewis, and they put them up on stage in a big, big way, and they did that whole thing about weddings of various kinds. So, yeah, it's not the best way to look at the whole picture of what's going on. I was glad that a band called Vampire Weekend got at least one award for alternative music, because they have evolved from this interesting, being influenced by Paul Simon's Graceland, the African pop on that they heard, they said, while they were in car seats in their mom and dad's minivan, and they got to Columbia University in New York, and they found they all shared some of that influence, and so they started writing songs off of that, and now three albums later, they've done what we were talking about before, and they've evolved their studio music into a combination of rock band and new sounds, and they're really doing some interesting things.
Doug, thanks so much for that call. You could join us next at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. As we mentioned earlier in the hour, this year is the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' appearance on Ed Sullivan, which sort of launched the British invasion, as it's known, and may have sealed the fate of the Brillbin Building writers. What was it that was so appealing to these groups, especially the Beatles, to write their own songs? And did they really pave the way for the modern songwriters that we still see around today?
Yeah, I think they did stand out in England, and we got to remember Beatlemania started in England in 63 before they ever went on the Ed Sullivan show, and that's a sign of how special their talent was as a band and also as writing songs. So that just once they got on Ed Sullivan and other things in America, that started to set that model that really talented rock bands could also write their own songs, but they were synthesizing American music in their songs, everything from Brill Building songwriters like Carol King. They loved Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow by the Shirelles, Please Mr. Postman from Motown, and then more rockin' things. So they were just wonderful synthesizers of American music, and ironically, they sold it back to the American audience in their own original way.
Here's All My Lovin'. I'll pretend that I'm missing the lips I'm missing and hope that my dreams will come true. Pretty straightforward there, nothing too complicated. A couple of guitars, a bass, and a set of drums, and you've got yourself a rock band. And that was kind of the pattern, although you could tell if the band was more sophisticated because they might have an organ, and if they were really cool, they had a Hammond B3 with a Leslie cabinet.
Yeah, that's a heavy thing to haul around, but a lot of bands did and still do. But yeah, that's a synthesis song there because it's really kind of pretty sounding. And yet it has kind of a little bit of a rockabilly bounce to it. So they could do that kind of music live and pull it off until people started screaming so much, like you said, that they couldn't hear themselves.
And we had Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr performing together on a song at the Grammys. Paul McCartney still going strong today, still touring, still outperforming. And as we mentioned earlier, had that song with Nirvana that got Song of the Year. Classic rock still rules. It's all over the radio dial. It's perhaps because the FM band is now so fragmented, we still get a lot of classic rock, whereas maybe in years past, if there was only one top 40 station, stations tended to move on a little bit. Let's explore that a little bit after we take a break. We're talking about rock and roll this hour with Peter Rawler, Associate Professor of Music at Alverno College in Milwaukee, and with you at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. Little Richard ripping it up, and he's still a great performer to see on stage if you can catch his act. It's absolutely amazing. We're talking about rock and roll this hour with Peter Rawler, Associate Professor of Music at Alverno College. He's the author of Milwaukee Garage Band's Generations of Grassroots Rock. Dave is with us in Milwaukee. Dave, good morning.
Oh, hi. Hey, Peter. My comment is... I've noticed in the last 15 years, and specifically in the last 5 years or 8 years, it seems to me that 90% of all new songs by pop artists and the pop country artists are formula non-songs, where there's not actually any kind of creative process going on. In other words, I go to the coffee shop and I hear... 90 songs in a row by all different artists, or I go into a store and hear country, modern country music, and all I hear every time, every single time, I can actually predict it, is G, I don't know the numbers, but it's G, D, E minor, C, with no melody structure above it except for three notes being repeated over and over again over those changing chords, and that is what I've noticed is going on, and I think it's absolutely a tragedy.
Peter Rawler?
Well, you're doing some deep analysis. That actually is a chord progression that's extremely popular, and one that got a Grammy Award is Wagon Wheel by Darius Rucker, formerly of Hootie and the Blowfish. And if you analyze that song, it's just those four chords over and over again. It's very catchy. But your point is that things tend to sound a lot alike, and you're not hearing as much creativity and variation. And I think what filters through the majors labels that are left today, and they're very endangered, is often just stuff that's really been sculpted thinking you're going to have a hit record because they're desperately trying to keep having a hit record and bring in money.
Yeah, but, I mean, Pete Seeger, who just passed away, famously said any song that you can't play with only two chords isn't worth playing. I mean, popular music hasn't had real complicated chord structures. It's not like it's not like Mozart or Bach.
Yeah, that aesthetic of basicness, but you can do creative things, and different singers and different bands can do different things. And it's out there, but it doesn't often filter to the top.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Stevens Point this time and hear from Jade. Hi, Jade.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. I have a fondness for folk music. I actually mourned Pete Seeger when he passed. But, you know, beyond folk music, I really don't have much of a music history. I have recently fallen in with some music majors and self-proclaimed music geeks who have reintroduced me to music through the rockabilly style of country music, which I figured I would loathe, but I'm actually finding it quite accessible. And I was just wondering if you could comment maybe on the anthropology of the music deficient people like myself, how this style of music has brought people like me back into some interest. I mean, I left music as a hobby in the 80s, and I kind of blame that on the style of music that I was subjected to in the 80s.
Huh. Well, you make a good point about how we often bridge from the music that we're really been involved with and love, maybe a few more acoustic folk, and then towards things that we can open our ears to. And rockabilly did that for me when I was on my journey of discovering all the roots of rock and roll. And, you know, I loved how the really early Elvis Presley and other Sun Records people had the bounce of kind of high tempo country music with the blues and just some wildness to it. And again, in modern country, you can hear some of these guitar oriented performers sometimes just sounding just like old Sun Records and doing very well today. And so I wouldn't give up hope of finding things. And then I'd remind you that with your folk interests, that very big bands like Mumford and Sons, who were like the band a year ago on the Grammys, have turned back from electric guitar band towards acoustic instruments, banjo, acoustic guitar, mandolin, and yet they're really popular with the young generation.
Well, you know, and that brings me back to something I wanted to go to earlier. We've seen the FM band fragment on the radio, and so you've got all kinds of different genres of rock and roll or pop music, and so you can still find a classic rock channel in pretty much every market. Whereas when it was mass appeal, top 40, things tended to move on a little bit, and every once in a while an oldie station would pop up. But it's not just radio anymore. I mean, a lot of music these days is being played online and being introduced online and doesn't even get on the radio. And people are experiencing live music in a lot of local venues. I know in the area where I live, in the Twin Ports of Superior and Duluth, wow, the local music scene is just extremely lively. And you've got some bands from this part of the country, like Low, that have gone on and had some pretty big careers.
Definitely. And I think we have to remember that everyone is touring from Paul McCartney on down because the record industry is not what it used to be. And so live music, ironically, has become the central channel, and you can do it from the local amateur garage band right on up to the club scene and beyond.
Let's talk a little bit about how digital has had an impact on songwriting and recording. You used to have to go to a studio, and now if you've got a laptop computer and a little bit of software, you too can be a recording engineer.
Yep, and you can do a lot of creative things that don't need the bulky Hammond organ and Leslie speaker. So we're hearing even rock bands use a lot of sounds that people aren't really ready for if they just think they're going to sound like an electric guitar band. But it can be done in smaller spaces at home or just studios that are smaller studios and are controlled via the computer.
Well, this is our morning for lacrosse disc jockeys. We've got an email from John in Lacrosse who writes, I was a radio DJ in the 80s and enjoyed Cyndi Lauper, The Cars, etc. I grew up in the 60s with the Four Seasons, Four Tops, and Neil Sedaka. In retrospect, some of the acid rock of the later 60s and a whole bunch of the guys in the 70s singing about how they gotta keep moving on did not hold up as well as some 80s and early 60s music, in my humble opinion.
Well, that's a broad part of music history there, but I think it just shows how deeply we all are listeners to pop music, and then we start to have discussions and ideas, and just let's not lose each song one at a time, because that's really where the engagement is, and then you can go from there. So I like some Four Seasons, but then I have some Four Seasons that drives me crazy, and I could go on like that with many different songs.
They weren't my favorite group, but I always anything with harmony appeals to me, but I guess my tastes are pretty eclectic, and I've found something to listen to in almost every era, but I have to say that it's maybe getting a little less so as I get older. I don't know, I'm probably becoming more set in my ways. Let's take a quick call from Brian in Oconomowoc. Brian, go ahead.
Hi, I was just calling. I love the show. I was co-teaching a class in Watertown, Wisconsin, last semester, and they had a class called the School of Rock, where they went through the history of rock and roll from the 50s or so all the way until like the early 90s. They could have gotten up to today, but it's a great book that they studied out of. It's called What's That Sound by John Kovach.
Okay.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right, Brian, thanks. Professor?
Yeah, that's my textbook. There's a lot of rock history things out there, and they keep changing, but John Kovach is both a guitar player and a music theory professor, and so he came up with a pretty good one, and he digs into songs rather than generalize all the time.
So we got about 20 seconds left here, Professor. Where's rock and roll headed?
I think it's still bubbling along at the grassroots level, even with amateurs picking up guitars and bass and drums and loving playing it. And then it's also going to wide places on the internet. And some of these amateurs put YouTube clips up and they go from their basement to being heard all across the world. So it's a kind of a new landscape now.
Peter Roller, thanks for joining me this hour.
It was a pleasure.
Rock on. Peter Roller is Associate Professor of Music at El Verno College. He wrote the book Milwaukee Garage Bands, Generations of Grassroots Rock in History on History Press. Let's see. Robin Cherry produced this hour and handled on-air production. Bill Martins was the director. John Munson in for Joy Cardane. The Week in Review is next. Let's listen to some Beatles on the way out here.
He didn't notice that the lights had changed.